time like the present, might as well jump into it here on the Panther Lair Show on Tuesday night as we go live. We appreciate everyone who's jumping in to talk a little bit sports here on a Tuesday. Appreciate everyone who listens to the podcast through the week. I always feel like we're doing this for two audiences, you know? We got the Tuesday night live audience, which, great to see everybody filtering in, rolling into the chat room, and enjoy seeing a lot of familiar names. And every now and then some new names pop in and join the conversation. It's always fun to, see some familiar names, see some people that we see kind of on a week-to-week basis. And we know we're doing the show for you guys because you're part of it as the show is happening on a Tuesday night. But at the same time, this is still the Panther Lair podcast. You know, this is still the podcast that gets released for the week. And I know there are still a lot of people who listen through the week to the podcast on Wednesdays and beyond. And, you know, we're doing the show for them as well. So, we kind of do it for two audiences. So we sit here and talk about what's going on Tuesday night. I mean, like right now it's Tuesday night, November 10th, 2020. It's 8:30. This is when we do the podcast. It's when we do the live show. And I mean, it was a beautiful day today. You know, it was absolutely gorgeous. It was a summer day. It's November 10th, and it was a summer day. I was grilling today, and raking leaves in shorts and a t-shirt. It was a summer day. It felt like the last day of summer. I don't know how many more of these days we're going to get. And so it's funny, I could be sitting here talking about how warm it is outside and how beautiful of a day it was, but you might be listening to this podcast on Thursday or Friday, and the weather might not be quite so nice. So, you know, we kind of balance the two audiences here. I guess the best way to do it is to talk in sort of general weekly terms about Pitt and what's going on with Pitt. But, can't ignore the fact that we're sitting here together on a Tuesday night with a bunch of people rolling in, ready to talk about Pitt sports. And, I think we got plenty to talk about. It's different, kind of like it was different on Saturday. After the Florida State game, it was a little different to, it was a little different to do a post-game show on Saturday after a win. We hadn't done that in a long time, more than a month. And, it's sort of the same way. We're sitting here on Tuesday doing a podcast, the live stream podcast, the Panther Lair Show, after a victory. We're not entirely used to this because it's been so long since we did this. I mean, we spent so many weeks there talking about the downward spiral of the program and how bad this season has been and where it went wrong and how it got so far off the tracks. And look, they're still a 4-4 team, even though they won on Saturday. They beat Florida State, and Florida State's not very good. I mean, they're downright bad, and they looked bad against Pitt, and kudos to Pitt for taking advantage of a bad team, but they beat a bad team. I don't think there's any mistaking about that. So, I mean, they're not out of the woods yet at all. But it's still a different vibe. It's still a different vibe after a win than it is after a loss. And it's funny, I kind of talked on Saturday when we were doing the post-game show, the post-game live Panther Lair show here on YouTube, and we do it after every game. And I talked, sort of wondered aloud about what the numbers were going to look like comparing that live show to the live shows after the NC State or Boston College or Notre Dame or Miami games. And not surprisingly, it didn't do nearly the numbers. A lot more people showed up to talk about the Notre Dame game and showed up to talk about the Boston College game and the Miami game than showed up to talk about the Florida State game. And there's, it's kind of funny how that works out. But I mean, people get fired up and angry, and they want to talk when they're angry more than they want to talk when they're happy. Before we jump in, I got to give a quick shout out, of course, to Home Field Apparel. They got the Warm Up the Victory Lights shirt. I'm sporting that one tonight. They got great stuff there. Homefieldapparel.com. Go check them out. They have deals with lots of colleges across the country, and they put out a high quality product. And I think this can't be, the importance of this can't be overstated or shouldn't be, and definitely shouldn't be understated. This is a very soft, comfortable t-shirt. Fits well. And it's just, it feels good to wear. And I wear a lot of t-shirts. And I can tell you, some t-shirts feel better than others. And Homefield makes some of the best t-shirts I've ever worn. I mean, they're just very soft, very comfortable. And they have great design. So you see the one I have on is the warm up, the victory lights with sort of a classic pit helmet logo on it. A bit of a retro look to it, a retro feel to it. Nice yellow and blue. They have great designs for pit and every school that they represent or have licensing deals with. And so it's just a high quality all around product. It's a really good t-shirt, really great designs. I highly recommend it. Homefieldapparel.com. Go check them out. They support us, podcast and the website, so you should definitely go check them out and support them. Hopefully everyone's got their drink tonight. We've got the RX pumpkin ale is what I'm enjoying. Western Pennsylvania's premier gluten-free craft brewery, or at least the only one I know of. There are more gluten-free craft breweries out there. Please, by all means, let me know, because I would like to find them. I enjoy RX a lot, but I also like to drink a lot of different beers and from a lot of different brewers, and found some different gluten-free places here and there since I've started trying a new diet early in the summer. And I always want to find new ones to try, and Oryx has some great stuff. I mean, this pumpkin ale is every bit as good as any other pumpkin ale I've had, with or without gluten. And they make really good pale ales. They have a peach ring sour that's just outstanding. So go check them out. If you're looking for a gluten-free beer, you want to try out that sort of dietary approach, go check out RX. They're on 65 and Emsworth. That's not a sponsored bit, folks. That's what I'm actually drinking. So hopefully you've got a good drink tonight, just like I do. But as we talk about this game and moving on from the Florida State game and where Pitt is right now, they're 4-4. I was thinking about this, during the week, early in the week, I was thinking about this. I had said a bunch of times, really over the last couple weeks, talking about this season as a whole, that look, the idea of salvaging the season is a very relative term. You're not going to get this season to turn away from being a disappointment. When you lost to Boston College, when you lost to NC State, the season became officially a disappointment. And you can't really undo that. You're not going to be able to undo the NC State and Boston College games, because no matter how good you finish, you're still going to have those losses hanging over you. And if you finish with 6 wins, it really should have been 8 because of those 2 games. And if you somehow finish with 7 wins, it really should have been 9 because of those 2 games. You're not going to be able to change that. And that disappointment, that sort of stink from those 2 games is not going to go away, no matter what they do over the rest of the season. And so, when you talk about Pitt having a chance to salvage the season with what they do in these final, we talked about it a lot in the off week after the Notre Dame game, what to do with these final 4 games, counting the Florida State game, now 3 games remaining of Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech and Clemson. We talk about what it means to salvage the season. It's a very relative term, because you're not going to salvage it into anything you would really be proud of compared to what your expectations were before the season started. It's going to be a disappointment. It is a disappointment, and that's not going to go away. And what I said a lot during the off week, and what I still more or less tend to believe, is that you're not going to be able to make it this season into not a disappointment. But what you can do is salvage it by, preventing it from turning into an, abject disaster. That's really what was on the table for this team. Finishing with a winning record, which is an extremely modest goal for a program in its 6th year under the head coach. But finishing with a winning record and avoiding, like I say, an abject disaster. And what qualifies as a disaster? I think losing multiple games between Notre Dame and Clemson would be a disaster if you were to lose at least 2, if not all 3, of Florida State, Georgia Tech, and Virginia Tech. That would have been a disaster. Obviously, they've got 1 win, still have 2 more to go before they get to Clemson. You really can't lose. You shouldn't lose either one of those games. If you're really going to save some pride in this season, save some dignity from this season, you have to go out and beat both of those teams and then try to give a respectable effort against Clemson. Clemson is going to be very difficult to defeat. And I know we just saw them lose a game, but they're still really good. They just happen to be not as good as Notre Dame the other day while playing without their starting quarterback. For Pitt, I think salvaging this season, I don't know. I've taken a new sort of look at it in the wake of the Florida State game. Because quite frankly, I mean, like, I was like a lot of you, right? Coming out of the, you know, the losses to NC State and Boston College, and then, you know, disappointing loss at Miami. Not a bad loss, but a disappointing loss, given that it really should have been closer than it was. And that was a game that maybe if they have Kenny Pickett, they quite possibly could have won. But then to get just destroyed by Notre Dame and sit at 3-4 entering that off week, I was like a lot of you. I thought I was fairly confident they would win another game, at least one, and probably a couple in the final four games. But I felt like they were going to have to scratch and claw their way to get through it, just like they did for the better part of last season. You know what I mean? They really didn't have blowout wins last season. They barely got past Ohio. They barely got past Delaware. They barely got past Duke. They went to overtime against North Carolina. They barely got past Georgia Tech. And even if some of those games were double-digit victories, they were a lot closer than they should have been if Pitt was of the quality that we believed them to be. They obviously barely got past Eastern Michigan. And that's what I thought these final four games were going to be like, or at least these three sort of winnable games, Florida State and Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech. I thought they would win one, maybe two out of those three, but I thought they would have to just inch their way past, you know, and scratch and claw to try and pull out a win. I did not think they were going to win one of those games, any of those games, 41-17. I did not think they were going to go out and, you know, after a certain point, pretty much dominate the game, which is what they did against Florida State. A.J. Wood's interception, and I talked about this after the game. I wrote about it on Monday on PantherLair.com, and I'll probably continue to reference it. Huge, huge interception from A.J. Woods. All the momentum was in Florida State's favor at that point. You know, there was, what, kicked a field goal, and then Florida State scored back-to-back touchdowns. They get the 88-yard touchdown run. All the momentum is on Florida State's side. All of the energy is on Florida State's side. Pitt looked like it didn't want to be in that stadium for 1 minute longer. And if Florida State goes down and scores again, that game is over. I don't see Pitt fighting back at all. But A.J. Woods gets that interception. Pitt cashes it in with a Nick Patty rushing touchdown at all things. And the Panthers really were in control from there until the end of the game. It totally swung momentum. I didn't see them having a game like that. I didn't see them being in control of a game like that, even against a bad team like Florida State, because again, we saw them play bad teams last year. We saw them play Georgia Tech, you know, where a turnover near the end zone really kind of flipped the game in Pitt's favor. And that's how close it was to being an even closer game than it ended to be. We saw them barely get by against Eastern Michigan, where they needed to go until the final minute of the game before they took the you know eventual go-ahead score for good. You know, we saw it time and time again, you know, the Duke game. Think about how that went down, how they gave away a lead. The Syracuse game as well, they gave away a lead, and they end up barely, you know, holding on to win. And then, of course, the Miami-Boston College games, it got away from them altogether. I did not see Pitt having the kind of success that they had against Florida State. And again, Florida State's bad. But I didn't think Pitt was good enough to put a team like that away, to really kind of control the game the way they did. And it changed my perspective, and it changed my expectations, and it changed what I'm looking for in the final three games of the season, or at least these next two. Because now, I'm not necessarily looking for Pitt to go out and beat Georgia Tech 41-17 or beat Virginia Tech 41-17. But what I am looking for them to do, and what I think actually can change my perception of this season and maybe salvage it a little bit more than I thought was possible, maybe not out of the realm of disappointment, but a little bit closer to that ceiling, what they can do is go out and play competent football and control a game again. Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech are not good. Are they better than Pitt? Maybe, maybe not. They're all around the same level, at least based on how they've played to this point. Virginia Tech looks pretty bad. Georgia Tech looks pretty bad. Pitt has, at a number of points this season, looked pretty bad. But right now, Pitt is the hottest team because they're coming off a 41-17 blowout of their opponent. Virginia Tech's coming off a loss to Liberty. Pitt has an opportunity here to go on a run over these next two games. If they can continue playing the way they did against Florida State, they can go on a little bit of a run, build some momentum, and potentially be competitive against Clemson. And look, nobody's going to be happy about a 6-5 record if that's what it ends up being. No one's going to be excited about that. No one's going to change their opinions about the coaching staff or the roster, or the talent or the personnel or anything like that based on a 6-5 record and maybe being competitive against Clemson. Nobody's going to say that's good enough because it's not good enough. But they are where they are right now, you know? And entering the Florida State game, they were a 3-4 team on a 4-game losing streak. And not every 3-4 team on a 4-game losing streak can come out and beat a conference opponent, a Power 5 conference opponent, by 24 points in a game where they really kind of dominate. Not everybody can do that. And that makes me think that they have the potential to be a little bit better than average. And if they can be a little bit better than average, then they should be able to take care of Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech. And so, you know, that's not what I'm predicting for this team. But it's where, I don't even want to say that's where the expectations are, but it's what they need to do to potentially salvage this, that, you know, it's a salvage the season to make it a little bit less of a disappointment. Now, the potential for a disaster is still out there. As long as you have these games on the schedule, as long as there are games to be played, this team has shown that it is capable, fully capable of diving headlong into a giant pool of disaster. There's no question about that. And you cannot rule that out. Not when you've got these losses to Boston College and NC State on your resume. Not when you got destroyed by Notre Dame the way you did. This team is still very much susceptible to those kinds of things. This team is still very much vulnerable. This team has its weaknesses. It is a flawed team. The offense, for all of its, outbursts of scoring, I mean, I guess the team scored 41 points. They got a defensive touchdown. So the offense scored 34 points, scored 4 touchdowns. They still didn't really drive the length of the field consistently. Their 4 touchdown drives all started in Florida State territory. They all were the product of turnovers or turnover on downs. That's a problem. That's something they still need to take care of. They had their second best rushing game of the season. This is just the second time all year they've had more than 100 yards rushing as a team. They still didn't look great doing it. So that issue still needs to be taken care of. They avoided dropping any passes, so that's a good thing. But we know they've done that enough this season that you can't entirely rule it out as a problem that'll creep up again. And they still had a lot of penalties, which is, again, another issue. So this team's not out of the woods. They didn't change who they were because they were able to beat up on Florida State. But what they did is show that they still have the potential to put it together against a bad team and put a bad team away. Which, I don't know if you or I believe they still had that potential, you know, because it had been a long time since they won a game like that by that many points and in that sort of dominating fashion. And I mean, it wasn't dominating the way they dominated Austin Peay, but they were in control of the game. And they were in control of the game pretty much from A.J. Wood's interception on. So they've shown that they're capable of doing it. It's just a matter of seeing whether or not they can go out and do it again. You know, it's a matter of seeing whether they can go out and do something similar to Georgia Tech, do something similar to Virginia Tech, to say, you know what, we're better than we've looked through the first half of the season. We can finish strong here. And they've got the opportunity. The schedule sets up well for them to have that opportunity. And we'll see if they can take advantage of it. A couple super chatters already jumping in there. We appreciate it very much. RJ Seaman 38, one of our friends of the show, who's jumping in as a super chatter. We appreciate your contribution. Says Florida State has scored 17 points in the second half this year. So couple that with short fields and defensive scores, one can surmise 41 points. Yeah. So like I say, you know, Pitt's offense has not done a great job driving the length of the field. They didn't do a great job driving the length of the field against Florida State, but they did take advantage of Florida State's, you know, giving nature. You know, they were able to take those turnovers and convert them into points and touchdowns. They were able to take the favorable field position and get touchdowns, not just settle for field goals. That I think was important. And I mentioned about the consistent offense, building a consistent offense that drives the length of the field, that kind of thing. But, you know, there's also something to be said for cashing it in when your defense gives you an opportunity. And they were really good in the red zone. I think they scored a touchdown every time they were in the red zone, except that one time that Jordan Addison's touchdown got overturned and Nick Patty got stuffed three times. But otherwise, you know, I mean, they were able to capitalize. And so ideally, your offense will be able to drive the length of the field every time they get the ball. You know, failing that, you at least have to be able to capitalize when you are given favorable field position, when the other team turns it over. When your defense makes plays, you need to get touchdowns out of it. And that's what they did on Saturday. And that's huge. You know, I mean, that can change the course of some of these games coming up. If they're able to do something similar against Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech, their defense is good enough, it'll give them opportunities on short fields. They've got to turn those opportunities into touchdowns, which is what they did in Tallahassee. Royce Beacom also joining in as a super chatter. We appreciate you, Royce. We'll get to your comment right away as well. He says, I have to agree with Pat Narduzzi's objection that Notre Dame should be in the conference or not. It was said that there is some agreement by other key figures in the ACC, but few are actually stating a strong opinion. Yeah, if you're not sure what Royce is talking about, Pat Narduzzi was asked about the Notre Dame agreement and arrangement and Notre Dame being in the conference this year and not in the conference other years and playing five ACC games every year and sort of this half in, half out for football thing that is this, you know, it's a kind of thing. It's a kind of agreement that no conference would do with any school other than Notre Dame. And every conference would do it with Notre Dame. You know what I mean? I don't think the Big Ten would say no to this arrangement. I don't think the SEC would say no to this arrangement. The Pac-12, the Big 12, the AAC, the Sun Belt, whoever it is. If Notre Dame said, we want to play five games against your conference every year, those teams would take it. All right, you get national attention. You get national eyes on you for playing Notre Dame. It's not going to put you over the top. It's not going to make you some recruiting powerhouse just to play Notre Dame, but it gives you more eyeballs and gives you more attention than you would otherwise get. As for Pat Narduzzi's comments, and you know, he was basically saying, you know, they should either join in or, you know, we're not going to give them five games every year. Make them go find their own opponents if they don't want to join the conference and that kind of thing. You know, I don't think Pat Narduzzi is really on point here. I think he's pretty off base. I got to be honest. I think he's just misguided on the Notre Dame situation. First of all, if Notre Dame didn't have this agreement with the ACC, Pitt would probably have even more games against Notre Dame. So, you know, as far as the matter of Notre Dame finding non-conference opponents, they won't have trouble finding non-conference opponents if the ACC doesn't give them five games every year. One of the teams that'll be lining up every opportunity they get to play Notre Dame is Pitt, because that has been the case. And they've had a long-term contract for a long time. They actually have fewer games against Notre Dame now, with Notre Dame having this ACC arrangement, than they had previously lined up. You know, the idea of if Notre Dame doesn't want to join the conference, let them go play BYU. Well, they're going to be playing Pitt, and that's what Pitt wants. Pitt wants to play them. Look, I think it's going to take a long time for anyone to convince Notre Dame to join a conference. Maybe this year, being in the ACC this season, changes their perspective on things. I don't think it will. I think it's going to take a long time and some very different circumstances and the environment to change considerably in college football to get Notre Dame into a football conference. Failing that, having this affiliation with Notre Dame is about the best that anybody can hope for. And like I say, I think every conference in the country would take this deal, even if it means letting Notre Dame in on some of your bowl bids as well, which is certainly something of a downside. Although it probably helps the conferences in negotiating with the bowls to get the bowls signed on, the potential of having Notre Dame in this year or that year. I mean, I don't see a lot of downside to the arrangement with Notre Dame. Okay, well, actually, the only downside for Pitt to the ACC's arrangement with Notre Dame is that, like I said, Pitt gets fewer games with Notre Dame than it would have otherwise. And as far as letting Notre Dame in this year, I don't see the downside to that either, other than it brought a very good team into the conference. And that team looks like it's going to end up in the ACC championship game, you know, the way things are headed. And, you know, that's a downside for everybody because it made it more difficult to get to the ACC title game. So, you know, I think Pat Narduzzi was off base. I don't see a whole lot of reason to poke the bear that is Notre Dame. I think you take what they're willing to give you, what they're interested in, you know, collaborating on, and you make the best of it. That's just me, though. Let's get into some more comments. Matt Durney says, coming off a bye week at 45-3 loss, the Paris Ford fiasco, and down 14-3, all signs pointing to losing the team, but the opposite happened. Beat Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech and be competitive versus Clemson, and the arrows pointing up going into next year. Yeah, Matt, I agree with a lot of what you said there, man. I really do. I don't want to make too much out of this win, but there was definitely a before and after moment with the A.J. Woods interception where the game could have gone a different direction. I mean, it could have gone the direction we all thought it was going. You know, all of us watching the team and the players and the coaches all went into that game carrying the burden of a four-game losing streak and a 45-3 blowout, like you said, and Paris Ford leaving the team and Jason Pinnock getting suspended and all this drama and all this weight and all this, I don't want to say distraction, but there was a lot on this team. And they go down there and they fall behind 14-3 with an 88-yard touchdown run, which I don't think is an unimportant part of this whole equation. I know a lot of fans were jumping off at that point. You know what I mean? A lot of fans were giving up at that point. And I think probably some players were teetering on the edge pretty considerably too. They were on the brink. But they didn't give in. They didn't give up. And they got a big play out of A.J. Woods, a guy thrust into action, you know, in a starting job because of Jason Pinnock getting suspended, Marquez Williams being hurt. And he makes a huge play. And the whole game changed. You know, as far as the arrow pointing up for next year, this is actually something I've been thinking about a lot, too, because Saturday's game, it was a big team win. It was big for the team. It was big for Pitt and all those things. But there were some individual players that really stepped up, played big roles in that game. And I think their involvement and their performances are really encouraging for next season. I mean, the big one everybody was talking about is Brandon Hill, redshirt freshman safety from Florida, played a little bit last season. We talked about him obviously last week in wake of the news that Paris Ford had left the team. We talked about Brandon Hill and how he was going to have to step into that boundary safety job. And, you know, we talked about him after the game because of how he played against Florida State. And the thing I said last week before the game, and I wrote about it in the 3-2-1 column, I talked about it on the Panthers Insider Show, I talked about it here on the Panther Lair Show. The thing I said about Brandon Hill is that, look, when he committed in the class of 2019, when he committed in the summer of 2018, and Pitt signed him in the class of 2019, there was a lot of hype around him. Pitt fans were excited to get him. He looked like a really good recruit, an underrated three-star prospect with a solid offer sheet who had, you know, who jumped off the tape when you watched his film. And so it wasn't like they were putting some bum out there. But I still didn't know how he was going to do. I thought he was a good player. I believe he was a good player. But you didn't know how he was going to do. And when he missed the tackle on the 88-yard touchdown run, I thought, oh, well, there's your example of how the boundary safety position's going to work. And then he just went into beast mode. I mean, and I don't use that term lightly. He finished with, you know, team lead with 8 tackles. He had the interception return for 50 yards for a touchdown. He played, you know, his heart out and played a great game. You know, ended up, you know, ACC Defensive Back of the Week in his first career start. And he's a redshirt freshman. You got at least a couple more years of him. You got Servassie Dennis, who's the second leading tackler in that game. He ends up with 3 tackles for loss and 2 sacks. He leads the team in tackles this season, leads the team in tackles for loss this season. He's a sophomore. You got a couple more years of him. You had all those defensive backs that were down, all those corners. Jason Pinnock was suspended. Marquez Williams was out with an injury. Damari Mathis hasn't played all year. So you've got Eric Hallett, a redshirt sophomore who's a safety playing corner. And you got A.J. Woods, who's a corner playing corner. Woods gets the interception like I talked about. Hallett was really solid in coverage. Those guys are both sophomores. A couple more years of those guys. Rashad Battle steps in and gets 15 snaps at cornerback. He's a freshman. You got a couple more years of him, you know, and he played pretty well as a freshman. You, you came into this season. Pitt came into the season. You roll the clock back to August, right? And Pitt came into this season with Jason Pinnock and Damari Mathis at cornerback, Paris Ford and Damar Hamlin at safety. And, you know, if you go back to the spring or you go back to the summer, you ask anyone, all those guys would be gone. And you were going to say, how are you going to replace them in 2021? Because Pinnock and Mathis and Hamlin and Ford are going to play a ton of snaps. You're going to try and get some reps for some of the younger guys, but it's going to be hard to get them on the field because those four are so good. And then you're going to have to replace all of them next year. Secondary is taking a big step back. That is going to be really rough in 2021. Now, we sit here in the second week of November. Mathis hasn't played at all. Marquez Williams has stepped up and played really well all season. Pinnock goes out. A.J. Woods has stepped in and played well. Eric Halladay's shown that he can play both. He can play corner or safety. So he's an option at corner, which he's done this year. And he's also an option at safety to fill in one of those safety spots. And then Paris Ford is gone. He leaves the team. And you find out that you got a really good player in Brandon Hill. And then you've got also Rashad Battle, who's gotten on the field as a freshman. You've got Javonte Royal and Hunter Sellers waiting back there. You got Buddy Mack as a freshman safety. It wasn't the most painless process, but I think we found out a lot about the depth at secondary here. A lot about the depth in the defensive backfield for Pitt. And all of a sudden, 2021 secondary looks pretty good, formidable. And that's without even considering the possibility of some of those guys maybe coming back. I mean, Pinnock, Mathis, and Hamlin could all come back next year if they wanted to. When the NCAA said, you guys can have a free year of eligibility. So you've got all this young depth that's gotten tons of reps and played a lot this season. And I mean, guys like Hallett and especially Hill are going to play a lot the rest of the year, you know, in these final three games of the regular season. And then maybe one or more of those seniors comes back. Secondary's not going to have a drop-off next season. This could be really good again. And you go to linebacker and you see a lot of the same thing. You got Servassier Dennis coming back. He's got a lot of years left. You know, Wendell Davis is a redshirt sophomore. He started the season at middle linebacker. He got hurt. He hasn't played, you know, since like the second game. He's got a couple years coming back. Cam Bright is a redshirt junior. He's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, he potentially could leave for the NFL, I guess, after this year, or he could come back and finish his eligibility. You know, he's got at least one more year, depending on how he wants to use that free year of eligibility. Phil Campbell could decide to come back. And then the freshman linebackers, and I mean, I shouldn't skip over Brandon George, who I think is a really good option there as a sophomore linebacker, but the freshmen, Bengali Kamara and Solomon DeShields and A.J. Roberts. You know, Roberts has seen some snaps here and there, but watch Kamara and DeShields. They're killing guys on special teams, killing them on coverage units. Now, all of a sudden, the linebackers don't look like they're going to have a huge drop-off for next season. And really, the biggest area that you circle, that you get concerned about with drop-off from 2020 to 2021, is the defensive end. And that's more a testament to how good Patrick Jones and Rashad Weaver are compared to, you know, the guys behind them. And it's more a praise for Weaver and Jones than it is an indictment of the backups. Because I actually think there's some really good backup defensive ends on this team. It's just Weaver and Jones are playing at a really, really high level this year. Because I tried to think about comparisons. Like, who's the last great tandem of defensive ends on this team for Pitt? I mean, it was Greg Romeus and Jabal Sheard, right? Getting distracted on my years here. 2009, Greg Romeus and Jabal Sheard, both healthy. They were dominant. They had great seasons. Those guys, Romeus had 11.5 tackles for loss and 8 sacks. Sheard had 10.5 tackles for loss and 5 sacks. I mean, those guys had big seasons. They combined 22 tackles for loss and 13 sacks over the course of 13 games. Those guys were outstanding. This year, Jones and Weaver, through 8 games, 22.5 tackles for loss, 13.5 sacks. They're already past the numbers that Romeus and Sheard put up in 13 games. And these guys this year have only played 8 games. Patrick Jones has 11 tackles for loss and 8 sacks. Rashad Weaver's 11.5 tackles for loss and 5.5 sacks. These guys are playing at a really, really high level right now. And like I say, I like the guys behind them. You know, they got Habakkuk Baldonado back this past Saturday for the first time since the Austin Peay game, and he was flying around out there. He's going to keep getting healthier and looking better and better, and I think he's going to be a stud as a starter next year. I like how John Morgan has developed this season. You've seen him come along. Desmond Alexander was a starter every game last season. The only reason he's coming off the bench now is because they have Jones and Weaver. He's going to be back for next season. And then you've got, like, Deion Hayes, who looks really good as a freshman. I think he's going to be a stud. You're bringing in guys like Nekai Johnson. I mean, again, if it wasn't for Weaver and Jones being so good, I think we'd be even more optimistic about the young defensive ends on this roster. And then defensive tackle, the thing there is you've got everybody coming back. You know, Keyshawn Camp is the only senior in the defensive tackle ranks, and, you know, he could come back. He could use the free year and return. I think we all predicted a big drop-off for the 2021 defense. I look at the personnel, and I'm not seeing it. I'm sorry, there's going to be a drop-off at defensive end. Otherwise, I mean, I think they largely pick up where they left off because a lot of the guys will be back. A lot of the guys who are contributing this year and seeing a lot of snaps are going to be back next season. That's a pretty good place to be. Let's see here. Start scrolling through some more comments and questions and interactions and comments. Brock Madonic, one of our regulars, we always appreciate to see him here. When will we see more Jalen Barden? When will we see more of Javonte Royal? And lastly, do you expect Lucas Kroll back this year? If not this year, will you retire next year? Or Brock actually means return. All right. Let's see. Question by question here, Brock. Jalen Barden, I don't know. I would like to see more of Jalen Barden. I think he's got something to offer. I think he's a good player. I think he showed some of his potential in that Austin Peay game, but he really hasn't gotten any opportunities since then. I would like to see more of him on the field. I think he's got speed, which is, I mean, you can't replace that, you know, and that's something that if you've got it, you want to try and use it and get the most out of it. But right now, he's just not getting the snaps. I mean, I think, you know, I think you could find time to get him on the field. But if it doesn't happen this year, I think he's going to be a pretty big, I think he's going to be a pretty big contributor down the road in the future. Next question from Brock was, when will we see more of Javonte Royal? Yeah, we haven't really seen much of Royal at all. I'm not sure if he's played. You know, he's probably played some special teams, I guess. I'm not sure how many plays he's gotten on the field. But I don't know because we just talked a lot about the corners. If they get Jason Pinnock back from suspension, Pat Narduzzi seemed to make the case that they would. We'll see when Marquez Williams gets healthy, but you've got Eric Hallett looking good out there. You've got AJ Woods looking good out there. Rashad Battle appears to be the top freshman right now. But I think there's a lot of optimism about Royal and what he'll be going forward. I just don't know if he's going to get his opportunity this season. And then the last question was, do you expect Lucas Kroll back this year? And if not this year, will he return next year? Lucas Kroll, I don't know when, I don't know if he's going to play again this year. You know, he got hurt. He was hurt and missed the first game of the season, that Austin Peay game, and then he seemed to tweak his injury in the Syracuse game, and then he hasn't been back since then. I don't know if he'll be back before the year ends. I don't know what the latest is with him, whether he is or not. Why wouldn't he come back? You know, I think he came to Pitt to get an opportunity to play, to show what he can do and make a case for himself as an NFL tight end. He hasn't done that. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's going to draft him. So why wouldn't you come back and try and make another go of it and try and put some tape together, showing yourself catching passes and running after the pass and blocking and all those things to try and make yourself into an NFL prospect? I don't know Lucas Kroll's thought process. I haven't asked him, but I don't know why you wouldn't try or why he wouldn't come back. I mean, it seems to make perfect sense. Pitt fan 30 years. Hey, Chris, break down Jeff Sims for us. Yeah, Jeff Sims is interesting. The quarterback for Georgia Tech. He's a freshman. Kid out of Jacksonville. Pitt looked at him a little bit. I think they were recruiting one of his teammates, too. and tried to get him. So far, 1,300 yards, 8 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. He also rushed for 277 yards. He's rushed for 4 touchdowns, which leads the team. RPOs, that kind of thing. Scrambling. He can run. I don't know. He might be a bit of a better passer than Jordan Travis was last week for Florida State, while also being a really good runner. So, I mean, you got to kind of watch both sides of that. RPOs have definitely hurt Pitt in the past. We know that. Play action and those kinds of things have hurt Pitt. And, I'm sure Jeff Collins, the Georgia Tech head coach, is going to try and do those things this week with Jeff Sims. I mean, Pitt's going to have to do, a lot of the same things they did with Jordan Travis last week, as far as trying to pass rush and make life difficult for him, make it hard for him to make those reads, and make it hard for him to make good throws on time and all of that, while also keeping contained and not letting him get out and scramble and run for plays, which he has done this season. Let's see. Anthony Tennyson, we're lucky the D came alive because play calling is still an issue, but I don't anticipate that changing until Mark Whipple is gone. Yeah, I mean, there were questionable calls. You know, there were questionable decisions on offense, questionable plays that I didn't agree with, you didn't agree with. That's probably the case in most football games that we watch. I mean, I think, we all watched the Steeler game on Sunday. I think we saw decisions and play calls that we didn't necessarily agree with. You're going to have that. Overall, I thought Mark Whipple did a decent job. The running game still has some real question marks, not just in the effectiveness of how they run, but the types of things they try to do with the run game. You watch plays develop. You watch a handoff and you just think, I don't know. What was the best outcome here? You know, if everybody does their job, how is this play really supposed to work? Because it doesn't look like it was going to have a lot of success no matter what happens. So, there were definitely times during that game on Saturday where the thought came across my mind. I might have even tweeted it a few times of, why even hand off at this point? Why not just throw it every down? I know you can't do that. I know coaches will never commit to just throwing the ball every down, no matter how bad their running game is, just like they'll never commit to just running the ball every down, no matter how bad their passing game is. Although I think coaches would be more likely to go that way than they would to go with throwing it every down when their run game's not working. I was definitely feeling that at points during the Florida State game, but they also had their moments. The backs had their moments where they ran the ball well. Vincent Davis had a couple nice runs. AJ Davis looked pretty solid. Looks like he's getting healthy. And then, of course, Daniel Carter and Izzy Benacanda come in and close the game out. And I've mentioned this a few times on PantherLawyer.com, and it seems important, or at least notable. They got the ball with 4 minutes to go and needed to close the game, and they brought in their second team. Which, first of all, I never expected to see Pitt emptying the bench against Florida State on the road because they were winning this season. I did not have that on my 2020 season bingo card. But they come out with the second team offensive line. They come out with Daniel Carter, and he carries the ball, and then they flipped to Izzy Abanikanda, and they went back and forth between those guys for 7 plays, and those guys ran the entire clock out. No negative plays. Every play gained positive yardage. Every play moved the chains, but they moved the chains a couple times and ran the clock out. And, kudos to those guys. Let's see more of them. I'd like to see Daniel Carter and Izzy Abanikanda getting some more action out there. See what they can do, because they look pretty good in those last 4 minutes. So I don't know what the answer is with the run game. I haven't known what the answer was all season. I'm not smart enough to figure it out. My guess is it's probably a combination of coaching, play calling, scheme, and talent, personnel and execution. It's all those things, because it seems like different things go wrong on every play. But yeah, there were definitely a few that, had the head scratching. Let's see. TRR says, if Pitt finishes 6-5 and these bowl games keep falling by the wayside, I think it'd be tough to land a bid. Jason Martell says there's no minimum win requirement, for bowl games this year, but I'll be interested to see if teams even want lower tier bowl games this year. Another month of the worries might not be worth it. And John Christofich, I apologize if I butchered your name there, John, says Pitt will go to a bowl game if they win 6 games. There's no minimum win requirement. we'll see how it shakes out on how many bowls are actually in play when the season ends. We're still seeing like guys like Brett McMurphy and I think Mark Schlabaugh, or if not him, the other guy that does the bowl projections at ESPN.com, they're still projecting Pitt to get into a bowl. Whether it's, you know, Tulsa or playing Navy in the military bowl, that kind of thing. I don't see Pitt turning down a bowl bid. I think we talked about this last week, or maybe talked about it on the postgame show. I don't see Pitt turning down a bowl bid. It'll be interesting to see if they end up, 6-5. I would think they'll get an invite, provided there haven't been too many bowls that have gotten canceled. But on the matter of would a team turn it down, I don't see Pitt doing that. That's my opinion. I haven't asked anybody, but I'd be surprised if Pitt were to turn it down. Jason Martell says, hats off to the interior defensive line. Lots of talk about the ends, and deservingly so, but the middle has been impressive, and they return a lot. Yeah, Jason, they, like I say, I mean, almost all the defensive tackles are back. I mean, Keyshawn Camp is the only senior, and you have to, you'd have to think he'd have to consider coming back since he's been hurt so many times and really has never put together a full season. You would think he would want an opportunity to play a full season, or maybe he would decide he doesn't want to get hurt again. I think that unit has been good. The tackles, they obviously haven't had the impact that they did last year with Jalen Twyman. That's to be expected. It's pretty unique to have a defensive tackle who can pass rush like that out of a 4-3 or a 3-4, really. I think they could be a little bit better. You watch like the Notre Dame game, you look at some of the scrambles Ian Book had. I mean, he was really getting up the middle. The pressure was coming, and then he was able to run up the middle. And those guys, weren't really minding their gaps, and they were getting blocked out of the play. They've done a good job against the run, I think. I think teams have struggled to run the ball up the middle, although part of that's the linebackers really filling the gaps as well. I think those guys have been okay. I don't think a real star has emerged. Well, Kalijah Kansi, actually. We're talking about he's one that's kind of emerged. He's been a little bit quiet in the last game or two, but he has emerged as a real – potential breakout star at defensive tackle, maybe a guy who next year could get close to double-digit sacks. I mean, he looks like that kind of a pass-rushing, quick defensive tackle. I think that group is pretty good overall. And I think when you've got the good defensive ends, that's and active linebackers, that's going to help for sure. TRR says, your outlook on the receiving core for 2021? I mean, to be honest, man, I was bullish on the wide receivers coming into this season. That hasn't entirely played out the way I expected it to. I thought Shockey Jacques-Louis would take a bigger step forward. Now, maybe some of the passes that would have gone to him have gone to Jordan Addison. Maybe Addison has really kind of taken over that role. But I thought Shockey Jacques-Louis would have a bigger year this year than he has. I'm not surprised that Jordan Addison has been a stud. That's what I expected. That was everything I had heard from different sources at Pitt, was that Addison's going to be the man. And so I kind of expected him to have a big role this year and to play really well. I'm really high on Jalen Barden and what he can do. I think he's going to be really good. But I thought Shockey Jacques-Louis would be more involved than he has been this season. Taysier Mac has made a few really great catches, which he is prone to do, but he is also, it's hard to say he's been, what's the best way to put this? I don't want to say he's been a disappointment, but he approaches that level, and sort of frustratingly, maddeningly inconsistent. He's a redshirt senior. I don't know if he would plan to come back or not, but I mean, when you look at what they have coming back for next year, you've got Jordan Addison, you've got Jalen Barden, you've got Shockey Jacques-Louis. I think that's a great start. You look at some of the freshmen they're bringing in, and Jaden Bradley and Miles Alston. I think they've got some good players. Oh, and Jared Wayne. I knew I was forgetting someone sort of significant, and I talked a lot about Jared Wayne last week, I think. I know I wrote about Jared Wayne last week, that I wanted to see Pitt get him the ball more, get him more involved in the offense. I think it, you know, he had two catches for 66 yards against Florida State. I think, you know, he's an important guy. He's got size that nobody else in this offense has, or nobody else in this receiving core has. I think he could be really good. So, I mean, if your top line receivers are, you know, Jordan Addison, Jalen Barden, Chalky Jacques-Louis, Jared Wayne, that's a pretty good start. Maybe DJ Turner opts to come back. I think he's a pretty good player. He was a pretty good addition as a grad transfer from Maryland. Maybe he would choose to come back and use that extra free year of eligibility. I think they've got some, you know, and then you add in the freshmen. I think they've got some really good players and a lot of younger guys, guys who are going to be around for a little bit, you know, at least the next couple years. I'm bullish on those receivers. You need somebody to get the ball to them, of course, and they need to be good in catching the ball. They need to be reliable and, you know, sound and all that. But I'm pretty bullish on those guys. Let's see. Dale Gribble asks, if we become bowl eligible, your opinion on where we would land? Well, I mean, I think you're looking at the general area of Military Bowl, maybe Pinstripe Bowl, you know, Detroit, if they're having the Detroit Bowl. I mean, that's kind of Music City, if that's an option, Tulsa, you know, these are the kind of bowls that if you're Pitt, you're probably going to end up in. And that's just the reality. And that's the case most years, unless you go, you know, you go and win 10 games or go win the Coastal Division or something like that. So, you know, that it's somewhere like that. Let's see. Kirby Brubaker, consistently inconsistent offense, running game, pass catching, and play calling leads to a lack of confidence. Confidence can be a great elixir for poor play. Pitt gained confidence throughout Florida State. Yeah, you know, I think they did too, Kirby. I think they got some confidence out of that game. I think, you know, I think it's important for them not to be overconfident and get too high on themselves. I think they need to remember. I think they need to focus on the things they didn't do well, to be quite honest. You know what I mean? I think they need to focus on some of the plays they gave up on defense, continue to focus on some of the plays they gave up on defense to, you know, in previous games, and the things they need to shore up there. And then they need to focus on the missed opportunities on offense. They took advantage of a lot of opportunities, like I talked about. They got favorable field position. They got into the red zone. The defense gave them good, you know, gave them turnovers. And Pitt was able, the offense was able to take advantage. And that's good. That's what you have to do. But you also have to look at the fact that they weren't able to drive the length of the field. And I think they need to focus on that. They need to remember that they're not good enough to coast to a win. They have to work very hard. They have to make big plays, impact plays, in order to win games, even against teams like Florida State and Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech, because they're not that far ahead of those teams, if they're ahead of them at all. And so I think they do need confidence. I think when you're in a four-game losing streak and part, you know, the fourth game of that four-game losing streak is a 40-point blowout loss, yeah, you do need to build some confidence along there. I don't think there's any question about that. But they also can't get too high on themselves, because this is a team that has to work very hard for success. And, I mean, everybody has to work hard for success. That's a bit of a goober comment. But I think you know what I mean. You know what I mean? They're not good enough to not work as hard as they possibly can and have success. So that's the key. Let's see. Scroll down through some questions here. David O. asks, do you think Kenny Pickett will return for one more year? If not, who do you think will be his replacement next season? Thanks. You know, I don't know about Kenny Pickett. I think there's a possibility that, he'll have the option to come back, right? If he wanted to come back, he could. The NCAA says he has the eligibility to come back. I'm sure Pitt would welcome him back. They'd be happy to have him back. So that opportunity is going to be there for him. Will he take it, though? Paterduzzi was saying something on Monday during his Monday press conference. He was talking about the backup quarterbacks or something like that, and said something about next spring is going to be big for those guys, talking about Joey Yellen and Davis Bevel and I guess Nick Patty as well in the competition to be the starting quarterback. It's so when he said that, it stuck out to me, and I kind of thought, it doesn't seem like he's expecting Kenny Pickett to return. So I guess, you know, the odds would be against it. You know, I guess if I was going to put a percentage on it, the percentage would be leaning toward the no side, that Kenny Pickett's not coming back next year. But I can't entirely rule it out until Kenny says it himself, you know? And I'm sure if he was asked about it, he would say, oh, I'm not really thinking about that right now. My focus is on Georgia Tech. I'll think about that after the season. I don't know what's going to happen. I think Pitt would love to have him back. You know, I think it'd be interesting to see what would happen if he did come back. I don't know if he would want to. Presumably working with a new offensive coordinator for the first time, I think he might be ready to try and get paid to play football for a living. His replacement, I mean, right now, I'm guessing it would be Joey Yellen. Davis Bevel will have a chance to win that job. Nick Patty will have a chance to win that job in the spring. My guess is, out of Yellen and Bevel, one of them will win the job and the other probably will transfer. And that has no... I don't know what either one of those guys is thinking. I've never talked to them about it. They've never spoken candidly to me about it. But if you look at college football, you look at college sports, that's what happens. You know, quarterbacks transfer. And, you know, both of those guys, they're redshirt freshmen this year. They'll be redshirt sophomores next year. You know, just a couple more years left of eligibility. They'll probably go. You know, I mean, if you don't win the job, probably a decent chance that you'll leave. And it's just kind of what it is. So I don't know who will win that job. I'm really intrigued by Davis Bevel and sort of his physical attributes. We've seen one game of pretty good Joey Yellen and one game of pretty bad Joey Yellen. So who is he and what can he do? Don't really know. don't really know. And we don't really know what Davis Bevel can do either. We know he can run better than Joey Yellen. But we've seen him do a whole lot of nothing in the limited opportunities that he's gotten so far. So I don't know who that replacement's going to be. It's going to be decided in the spring. So we'll figure it out. Or we'll see. Let's see. Scroll through some questions here. Pac-Man 2019 says, so if the offense improves to the point we win the next two games and scare Clemson and win the bowl, does Mark Whipple come back in your opinion? I'm gonna make this the last question here, Pac-Man. I don't know what Pat Narduzzi is gonna do. All right, I don't know if he's going to get rid of his offensive coordinator. I don't know if he's going to change coordinators or keep the coordinator. But I know this, and this has sort of been my standard answer every time someone's asked me about this, and maybe it's a cop-out, maybe it's not, but it's the best answer I can give you, right? What I know is this. Mark Whipple's numbers through 21 games now, I guess, are worse than Sean Watson's numbers were through 26 games. Two seasons of Whipple have been worse offensively than two seasons of Watson. And Watson got fired for it. It seems to me that Pat Narduzzi could very well follow that pattern and make a change at offensive coordinator this offseason, because the offense is not better than it was before Mark Whipple arrived. I purposefully don't advocate for guys to get fired or things like that. I just don't feel like it's my place to do that. I'm not a shock jock or a talk radio host trying to, you know, rabble rouse or anything like that. I'm just looking at the facts. And the facts are Pitt's offense is worse now than it was 2 years ago. And the offense 2 years ago got a guy fired. I don't know what could really happen over the next three games to change my perspective on what Pitt's offense has been for the last two seasons. And I don't know what could happen over the next three games to change Pat Narduzzi's perspective on what Pitt's offense has been for the last two seasons. So Take from that what you will. Pac-Man, take from that what you will. I want to mention again, Home Field Apparel. Make sure you go check them out, homefieldapparel.com. Great pit shirts, great pit gear, super comfy. Love this shirt. Love wearing it on a Tuesday night for the podcast. This is a cool one. They got a lot of great designs. Go check it out at homefieldapparel.com. Make sure you check out the website, panther-lair.com, pittsburgh.rivals.com. Excuse me. This is the most comprehensive source of Pitt sports news on the internet. Football, basketball, recruiting. You can find it all at panther-lair.com and message boards where we have, you know, conversations all day, every day about Pitt sports. It's like this podcast, but it's way more interactive, even more interactive than these live streams that we do. And we're on there all day, every day, literally all day, every day. When I get done with this podcast, when I get done taping this live stream on Tuesday nights, I close YouTube and I go back over to the message board and see what's going on in the conversations over there. So make sure you check it out, panther-lair.com. It's the best Pitt website for Pitt fans. It really is, in my opinion. Saturday mornings, of course, every Saturday morning, 8 a.m. on 93.7 The Fan, we have the Panthers Insider Show. So check into that. More Pitt talk on the airwaves. And then Pitt at Georgia Tech, 7 o'clock. So we're going to have a late one, folks. Thinking about maybe like 11 o'clock. We might do a post-game show at 11 o'clock at night. Woo-wee. That's going to be a fun one. We'll definitely have a couple cold ones. So get your beers ready, folks, for the post-Georgia Tech Panther Lair show. That's going to be interesting. We've never gone that late at night, but it should be fun. So mark that one on your calendars. Tentatively scheduled for 11 o'clock, barring overtime or something like that. So thanks so much to everybody for checking in here on a Tuesday night. Thanks for everybody listening to the podcast through the week. We appreciate it. Make sure you go to pantherlair.com. Have a great rest of the week. We will talk to you on Saturday night after the game. So have a great rest of the week. Enjoy the game on Saturday. We'll talk to you Saturday night. Thanks again. We'll see you.